On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, three little words, alternative minimum tax. If you haven't met it yet, you may soon, and it's a doozy. In 1969, Congress designed the tax to catch zillionaires who were paying not a penny in taxes while the rest of the country dug deep to pay for the Vietnam War. Now, the tax designed to force a handful of rich guys to pitch in is chewing well into the middle class. A quarter of American taxpayers are on their way to being hit by the AMT, households making $70,000 paying the rich man's tax. And it's a real whack, a shadow tax that makes a joke out of tax cuts for millions. And the dirty little secret is the federal government now depends on it. Up next on Point, a tax revolt over the AMT. Congress is holding hearings this week on the AMT, and we will hear in this hour from the congressman chairing those hearings, Richard Neal. But first today, joining me from Rochester, New York, is David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning financial columnist for the New York Times, who's covered U.S. tax policy for a long time. David, thanks very much for being with us here again on Point.
Well, thank you for having me.
There's a lot we want to learn here, but I wish you'd just take us back to that moment way back in January 1969, 3 days before the Johnson administration is about to end, and the Treasury Secretary, Joseph Barr, speaks up, and out of that comes the AMT. Take us back to that sort of cultural moment, that tax moment, and what transpired there. It's kind of illuminating, David.
Well, I remember this day, the day after, when it came out in the newspaper. I was a young reporter at the San Jose Mercury, about to go do police rounds in the morning.
Yeah.
And the headline was on the front page of the paper that there were these 155 families who paid no taxes, all of whom made the equivalent of more than $1 million in today's dollars.
155 American families paying no taxes, and there's the headline in 1969
right.
About it.
Mm. And, you know, my then wife and I were both furious about this, talking about it. Got to the first police department I went to. The commander was furious about it. And I think Americans all over the place were. It was very much discussed at the time. The Vietnam War was going on. There was a surtax. There was a lot of discussion of guns and butter.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great deal of discussion about taxes as a moral issue. And Congress got so many letters that year about these 155 families.
The rich paying nothing.
Paying nothing. In fact, it got more letters on this subject than it did on the war in Vietnam.
Wow.
And politicians being politicians, you know, they licked their finger, put it up to the wind,
right.
And said, we need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So Sheldon Cohen, who was LBJ's IRS commissioner, came up with a list of, you know, really abusive sorts of things that were used by very wealthy investors. Not anybody, but wealthy investors.
Mm-hmm. Write-offs on railway investments and whatnot, big time stuff.
Oil depletion, mm-hmm. Piled on interest, international transactions.
Yeah.
And they cobbled together this temporary list, and then they were supposed to take a serious look at it. Well, guess what? They didn't. They're politicians.
Mm.
Now, you jump forward to 1986.
Wait a minute. They did, though, come up with the AMT then.
Yeah, they came up with the MT then.
Okay.
The minimum tax. And
so that everybody would pay something was the idea in
that's
answer
correct.
To that pile and, of that mountain of letters.
And the only people who would pay it, Tom, were wealthy investors.
Mm-hmm.
That's who it was aimed at. They were the ones who were paying little or no tax. And by the way, the 155 families who paid no tax, there were thousands of families who were paying 5% of their income or 10% of their income
wealthy
on
families.
Million, multimillion dollar incomes.
Mm-hmm. But it was that zero idea that just outraged people, as you say, in coffee shops and police stations and across kitchen tables then. So here comes
and
the
so
AMT,
and
it's aimed straight at them. But of course, well, that was 155 families. If you fast forward, and I know there's a lot in the middle, David, we'll look at
yeah.
it. But if you fast forward to today, if I'm reading you correctly, it's something approaching 25 million taxpayers now
about,
being brought into the net.
23 million taxpayers, Tom, but it's a different tax.
Mm.
That's the important element,
yep.
is it's a bait and switch. The elements that applied to rich investors who were gaming the tax system
mm-hmm.
have either been removed or weakened. Some of those provisions are still in, but they raise very little money. Others have been gotten rid of. The reason the money is rolling in is that Congress, back in 1986, decided to treat as abusive tax shelters. That's what these things that
mm-hmm.
were in the 69 minimum tax were called, abusive
right.
Conduct.
Mm-hmm.
they had a new list of abuses. And the new list of abuses is you, the taxpayer, with your personal exemption, and your spouse, and your children, and the standard deduction, the most passive thing you can do. There's no way you can't take the minimum standard deduction except for this law.
Right.
And some of your medical bills. You get gravely ill. Congress says, well, sorry, you're going to pay higher taxes because you're sick.
Because you won't get an exemption for that.
You will not be allowed to deduct as much of your medical bills as you would under the regular tax system. So what they did in 1986, and I have to tell you, I can't find a single news clip indicating anybody reported on this at the time.
There way under the radar. Yeah.
Yes, way under the radar. Some short items in professional journals, nothing in the popular press. No one wrote about this at the time. No one paid any attention to it. It hardly raised any money in the beginning. But there have been more changes in the law since then, and President Bush's 2001 tax cuts were explicitly premised on increasing the AMT and having it take back roughly one-third of his tax cuts, mostly from the affluent, not the super rich the original bill was aimed at, but the affluent. People make $75,000 to $500,000.
Give a tax cut with one hand and take back a big chunk of it with the other at the same time.
That's right.
So who's paying, if it was aimed at 155 investor families early on, who's paying the alternative minimum tax, the AMT now, Dave?
The majority of the money will come from, unless Congress changes it, will come from people who make $75,000 to $500,000 a year. If you are married, have two or more children, own your own home, and live in one of the states that have significant taxes, and of course those are the states
taxes,
that also have the significantly good paying jobs,
mm-hmm.
you're almost certainly going to be in the AMT. Starting at $75,000, and by the time you get to somewhere in the low 100s, you're almost certain to be into it.
I'm reading here that in 2006, 4.2 million taxpayers were subject to the AMT. This year, it could be 23 million. That's a gigantic jump in a single year. What's going on?
Well, each year, because of the complaints about this, the Congress has enacted a patch, a one-year fix, to reduce the number of people who it applies to. Last year, it would have applied to more than 20 million people, but they passed a one-year fix. They can keep doing one-year fixes, but they're very, very expensive, and they're getting more expensive. This year, it's more expensive to fix the problem. It's $70 billion to bring back down to about 2 million people paying it. And even then, you're still hitting an enormous number of people who it had no intention to hit.
The thing I've
just
heard,
because they're married, have children, and own a house.
The thing I've heard from taxpayers about this is the kind of suddenness of it. It's sort of got a Jaws dynamic here where you're going along, you're calculating your taxes the traditional way. It sort of lines up with what your withholding has been. You look in pretty good shape. And then suddenly you tip into that AMT zone, have to recalculate, and instead of being, you know, a refund or nothing to pay, you've got a great big bill sitting right in front of you, and not just not chump change.
No, that's right. In fact, I talked yesterday to somebody who their AMT bill, it was $10,000. It comes as quite a shock to people to discover suddenly that it's there. And you wouldn't know it unless you look at the single line on the back side of your tax return where the computer will print it out if you use software or your tax preparer will put it. And if you do it by hand and don't calculate it and owe it, you'll get hit with penalties for failing to having figured out that you owe it.
And for a long time, this, as you say, was hitting the pretty affluent, made it hard to cry about because, you know, who's going to be that sympathetic with someone who's making $500,000, I mean, in terms of popular political support. But when it gets down into the $70,000 range, you're getting into big numbers of payers and voters. What kind of kickback is emerging now, David?
Well, so long as they keep putting a patch in place year by year, you're not going to hear a lot from people who are down at that level. It's theoretically possible for a single mother who makes about $30,000 to owe this tax. But you're not going to hear that much noise about it so long as they put a patch in place. The problem is that the patches have gotten to be so expensive that it would be cheaper this year to repeal the regular income tax and put everyone on the alternative minimum tax than to do it the other way around, repeal the AMT and put everyone on the regular income tax. The government has premised its budgets on growing income from this. President Bush's budget saying we're going to reduce the deficit going out in the future years are all premised on a huge increase in the alternative minimum tax.
Isn't this the thing? I mean, there's a kind of assault on the pocketbook here, but there's what feels to me like an insult to honesty here at the same time, because this is not what gets talked about. What gets talked about is the front end of the tax code, not this buried on the back page, and yet that's not the reality for so many millions of families.
Very much, Tom, this is the absolute core issue. It is complicated. People don't understand it. They don't want to think about it. It makes it easy, therefore, to conduct what I described earlier as a bait and switch. As currently written, I can't see any sound tax principle or moral principle here. I mean, is it going to be the policy of our government to say, if you're married, have children, and own your own home, we're going to take away all or part of your tax cut? I don't think that's what it was sold on. On the other hand, we have to remember that the fundamental driving force in the tax cuts that took place in 1986 and again in 2001, 2002, and 2003 was to lower the burden of taxes on the rich. It was not to look at the fairness of the system to people who make wage incomes that are modest or reasonably affluent.
We've been joined by David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning financial reporter for The New York Times. We're joined right now from Gaithersburg, Maryland, by Tom Curtis. He's CPA, certified financial planner at FSP and Associates, where he's been in the thick of tax preparation season. He's in it right now. Tom Curtis, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hello, Tom, and thank you for having me.
Here we are in that season, just talking with friends, you know, when we came back to work on Monday, who have spent the weekend with their pay stubs and tax forms and starting to get ready for April 15th. What about the AMT? How often, how hard is it hitting non-rich clients of yours, Tom?
Well, one of the things that I've noticed, Tom, is that people as low as $60,000 in income are starting to get hit by this. And if Congress doesn't make any changes, you know, they, as David pointed out, they made a change for this year, and they've been making changes each year over the last 4 or 5 years to increase the exemption amount so that this year, if you're single, it's $42,500 for 2006. But if no change is made, that's going to drop to $33,750. And the numbers are kind of all over the board as to who pays this and who doesn't pay this. But in the end, I've seen people as low with incomes as low as $60,000 who end up paying the AMT. And, you know, earlier I heard you refer to it as a stealth tax. I thought I was the only one that did that. But I have to tell you, I think that that is the most appropriate appellation for this tax. It really and truly is a stealth tax because nobody's talking about it. And the Congress doesn't want to deal with it. And the president, you know, talks out of one side of his mouth on tax cuts and knows about the AMT on the other. So it's sort of the perfect storm politically. It's bad tax policy, but it's great for revenue, right?
Well, Congress is going to be talking about it this week, and we'll hear in a few minutes from the congressman who's chairing those hearings. But I wish you'd paint the picture for us, Tom Curtis. You know, when the shark comes out of the water, when it bites, let's say, a couple who are sitting down with you, they've done their preliminary tax prep for you to work with. They've shown you their deductions and everything else. When you turn back and they've got some idea what they think their taxes are going to be, well, how does it play out when you turn back to them and say, wait a minute, by the way, you're now in the AMT zone and here's what it really is. Paint the picture of how that unfolds for us.
Well, there's a lot of shock and disbelief for most of these people, and I would say that the majority of the people that I see who have this sort of scenario are people where one of the spouses is an outside salesperson. You know, they might be an advertising salesperson or just about any kind of outside salesperson, and they have large employee business expenses which they have to take on their Schedule A, or I have one client in Nevada who plays lots of video poker and won $260,000 in revenue last year, but he has to itemize his losses on Schedule A. And because of that, he ended up paying about $8,000 in AMT that he didn't even know he was going to have to pay.
Do people believe you when you say, no, that's not the actual bottom line. Here's the bottom line. Here's what you owe?
Well, I've had some people get up and walk out and say, well, we'll go someplace else, you know, and we'll have somebody else do it. Sometimes they return, a lot of times they're pretty sheepish about, having made a mistake, but sometimes they'll return, sometimes they won't. But I think people are really starting to get a sense that there's something going on here that they're really not aware of.
I want to begin to hear from our callers. David K. Johnston is with us from the New York Times, and Tom Curtis, a tax preparer, with us from Maryland. We've got a call from Maplewood, New Jersey here. Timothy. Hi, Timothy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to pipe in and say that my wife and I have been hit by this tax for about 5 years now.
Are you rich?
Well, we both work in software, okay?
Okay.
So we both make about $100,000.
So you've got a household income of around $200,000, so you're not doing badly.
Well, no, but our property taxes are $22,000 a year on our house, okay, and the New York area is not inexpensive.
So we've heard.
So I think what I'd like to understand from Mr. Johnson is if there's really any possibility that this tax may get changed, if there's anything effective that people can do. I mean, I'm a little cynical. I think that the really rich people, the top 0.1%, really control the system.
And David K. Johnston writes here that it used to be in 69, 155 untaxed high-income families. That is now 2,824 untaxed high-income families. David, do you see a possibility of change here, Timothy asks, or has the country got itself boxed in a corner dependent on this revenue?
Well, in the short run, I think that, yes, politicians respond when they hear from people, and I think that people should tell their congressman, hard as it is to get to your congressman if you're not a campaign contributor, that this is an outrage and, you don't think it's fair. I don't think at the remaining amount of time President Bush has in office that he's going to try and undertake fundamental overhaul of the tax system. But I do think what the AMT is pointing up is that we have a tax system that was well designed at one time for a national industrial wage economy.
Mm.
We now live in a global services asset world, and this tax system doesn't fit the reality of the world anymore. It works against it instead of with the economic order.
Timothy, you say you're cynical, but does this still hit as a fairness issue for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the extremes of the wealth when you get to the top 1% of the population or top one half of 1% are just unbelievable. And I mean, I'm a working person and I'm very comfortable, I have to admit, okay? But I've been laid off twice. I'm at the mercy of corporations.
It's no cakewalk out there for anybody. We've got it. Timothy, thanks for calling. Let me get another call from Kingsborough, Massachusetts. Ferris is on the line. Hi, Ferris. You're on the air.
Good morning, Tom. How are you today?
Very well. What do you know?
Well, what I do know is that this is a great subject, and I wanted to ask David. I was doing my taxes the other day, and I had, during the dot-com boom, I'd started a company, then I lost about $750,000 over
Ouch.
That period.
Okay.
And so I have all this NOL carry forward.
Yep.
And sure enough, as I was going through in this new company that I started, we started to make some money, and boom, they kicked in the AMT. All of a sudden, it disregarded basically my NOLs and said, you know what? You owe us something like $25,000 additional taxes.
So those huge losses you were carrying forward that might have protected you as you start out entrepreneurially again, blown away by the AMT.
Exactly. It's a draconian system. It's not just plain bad. This is like a Boston Tea Party requirement here. It's terrible. It really is hitting the small business than anything else. The big businesses really don't have these types of problems because, they have C-Corps. They're not carrying any K-1s and stuff.
Yeah, they're in a different category, but you're the entrepreneur. Let me put it to Tom Curtis. Tom, what about this story? Here Faris is carrying forward big losses that ought to kind of protect him, but the AMT comes on and no.
Welcome to the real world. I hate to say it, but unfortunately, he's caught in what's called a catch-22, and there's just no relief for him out there unless the Congress, makes some serious efforts to really address this problem. As David said, and your earlier caller, you've got, the top 1% who aren't paying any income taxes at all or very little, and this is who this tax was designed for, and now it's hitting everybody in the middle class. And it's not just, You know, if you live in Timbuktu, Iowa, it's not going to bother you too much. But
well, why not? I mean, Timbuktu, Iowa is part of our family here.
Well, it is. But you see, out there, they don't have the high tax rates. Your earlier caller said that he made $200,000 and his property taxes were $22,000. Well, right there, the $22,000 in property taxes is probably going to trigger the AMT.
He won't be given any credit for that under the AMT.
And right.
Or if your state taxes are high. So it's is it blue states that get hit the hardest? Has it got a political tinge to it, David?
Well, it might, but I think it's more just the states that have the high taxes. States like Texas and Nevada and Washington, you're not going to feel the AMT as much as you will if you're living in California, New York, Massachusetts, or the Washington, D.C. area.
Let's hear something on that from Iowa. We've got a caller there right now from Applington, Iowa. Steve, you're on the air. What do you say?
I'm a farmer, and I just sold a farm.
Okay.
And I obviously knew when I was going in that I was going to have to pay some capital gains, but never thought about the AMT. And, you know, I just went in fact, last week to get my taxes done. And because of that sale, it kicked me into that bracket, and I've got to pay like almost $21,000 in AMT.
That's a real bite, even when you're selling a farm.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I didn't even think about. It just doesn't make any sense, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I guess, you know, it's bad enough that I got to pay the capital gains. I mean, you know, it isn't like I'm not paying. You know, if the tax is supposed to keep hit people that aren't paying, that's one thing. But I'm paying over $100,000 in federal tax, regular, plus I'm going to pay another $21,000 in alternative minimum.
But, Steve, you're selling a farm now, so maybe you're the rich guy this was targeted at.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
What about all the years I've owned it?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. Let me get one more here. Christina from Boston. Christina, you're on the air.
Hi, good. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Basically, I'm a single mother, and I own a home, and I'm making $1,000 a year now, obviously with the potential for my income to grow.
How much, Christina? I didn't get the number.
I'm sorry, $80,000.
Okay, yep.
And I'm very concerned. I mean, to be perfectly honest, if I was hit with a huge tax bill at the end of the year, it would sink me. There's no way that I could survive that. So I would like to know, how do I prepare? What is there that I can do to mitigate the effects of this or to hopefully to prevent it from happening at all?
Let's ask Tom Curtis, the tax preparer. Tom, single mother, $80,000 income, doesn't want to be whacked by the AMT. What can she do?
Well, if you have time, what I'd like to do is go through just a short list of things that will trigger the AMT. As your earlier caller recognized, large capital gains are going to trigger it. Mm. If you live in a state with high income taxes, as our caller currently lives in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. Income taxes are relatively high there compared to other states. If you own a lot of real estate and you're taking deductions for the losses on the real estate, if you're claiming accelerated depreciation on the real estate, if you refinanced your mortgage for more than the original purchase cost, if you have a home equity loan, believe it or not, if you have a home equity loan, you might subject yourself to the AMT.
But these can be pretty tough things to avoid, what you're describing, like where you live.
Well, you know, the home equity loan is something if you are thinking about doing, you might want to ask the person who does your income tax return, will this have an effect on me and will I pay the AMT? You know, if you exercise incentive stock options, you pretty much know that you're going to pay the AMT. But if you're taking out a home equity line of credit, you normally don't think about the AMT.
But for an ordinary person, this sounds like a buzzsaw that's kind of hard to avoid. You're trying to make more money, you're refinancing, maybe you're getting a home equity. These are rather ordinary things.
Well, it is. And as David pointed out earlier, the exemption rates are relatively low. So I think Congress understands that it's catching more and more people in the tentacles of the AMT. You know, if it drops back to $45,000 next year for married people and $33,750 for singles, you know, you could be probably a minimum wage earner in one of these states. In Maryland, where I am, we have something called the living wage, which is
right.
You know, a little bit larger than the minimum wage. And, you know, people paying who are being paid the living wage may be subject to the AMT next year.
And pretty soon everybody's paying the so-called rich man's tax, and we're hardly talking about it. Christina, thanks for your call. Tom Curtis, David K. Johnston, please stand by. We have with us right now from Washington, Congressman Richard Neal, Democrat, Massachusetts. He's chairman of the House Ways and Means Select Revenue Subcommittee. He's holding hearings on the AMT tomorrow. Congressman Neal, thank you for being with us.
Delighted to be.
Why are you putting up these hearings?
Well, I've been pretty consistent over the last 10 years. I have continued to file legislation that would eliminate the alternative minimum tax. And now that we're in the majority as members of the Democratic side, we are going to begin a series of intense hearings over the next 3 weeks in an effort to once again help define the problem for the American people. And then I believe after we finish that session tomorrow, we're going to move to hearing from practitioners, and we're going to hear real evidence from Americans who are caught in the AMT. And then I hope and anticipate that we will report back to the full committee. And sometime in the spring, I'm hoping that the members of the Ways and Means Committee, with Mr. Rangel's leadership, we're going to mark up a permanent solution to AMT, which we hope will involve a tax cut for 23 million Americans.
Congressman, let's be honest here, though. If the government gets $70 billion, if it would cost $70 billion to repeal the AMT, this is the number the Tax Policy Center has put forward through David K. Johnston writing it up here, $70 billion, can you really afford to repeal this thing? Is this sort of playing with us? Or is the government indeed dependent, addicted to it now?
There's no question that the government's dependent on it, but I also think that we can cause substantial changes in who was supposed to be determined to be part of AMT and those who have been caught in AMT. And I think that we can make a solution that will provide enormous relief, again, to 23 million Americans.
Are you saying shift it back up the income ladder, put it back in the laps of the wealthy?
Commit to a specific...
Well, who else? I mean, there's only the poor, the middle class, and the wealthy. Who else?
That's the point. I don't think we want to commit to anything specific until we go through these hearing stages. I think that's the way that you ought to approach legislation, vetting it through the proper committees. But I must say that... we intend to offer a solution, and I think that's a pretty firm commitment.
But give us a sense of how that would work. If you're not going to stop spending that $70 billion, and it's not going to be paid by the 23 million, many of whom are in the upper end of the middle class, somebody's got to pay it.
Good point.
So?
Well, I think that it would be unfair for me to speculate until we have an opportunity for members of the committee on both sides to offer solutions. But we fully intend, we have a solution that we intend to propose. And we want to go through this process of hearings to hear from people that are caught in AMT, and then we intend to offer a substantial tax reduction to 23 million Americans.
Do you have to find another rug to sweep it under?
Yes, we're going to have to find more revenue from another part of the income guidelines. There's no question about it.
But when 23 million are involved, how do you get away? I mean, those are such big numbers.
Let me go back to the original point here, and that is that AMT was never supposed to meet the road with people who earn $62,000 a year.
Yep.
And claim two children as dependents. I mean, the truth is that this tax, because it was not indexed for inflation, has now caught middle-income and upper-middle-income taxpayers, and it was never the intention of AMT to do that. So we're going to have to look at other income groups to find out if we can provide relief, and I suspect that we can, for those at the middle-income guideline.
Congressman Richard Neal of Massachusetts, we're glad that you're looking at this. Good luck with the hearings tomorrow. We'll be following.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. David K. Johnston is with us from the New York Times, also author of the book whose title tells you just how he sees it, Perfectly Legal, the Covert Campaign to Rig Our Tax System to Benefit the Super Rich and Cheat Everybody Else. Tom Curtis is with us from Gaithersburg, Maryland. He's a CPA and certified financial planner there at FSP & Associates. Right now, Alan is calling from Fairfield, Iowa. Hi, Alan. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Ronald Reagan's Grace Commission report made it abundantly clear, and it looked right into this issue, that money collected by the IRS does not actually go to fund the operation of the federal government, but goes to pay the interest owed to the Federal Reserve and investors in U.S. government obligations.
And there's a lot of that to be paid.
Yeah, and this includes the AMT. Now, the kicker is that the majority of the interest goes to the bankers who manipulated the American public into creating the Federal Reserve in the first place. The income tax was actually designed not to support the government, but to pay these bankers.
So what are you suggesting, that we welch on all those government debts?
No. What we have to do is recognize reality, that as a nation we made a huge mistake by allowing the bankers to be first in line to receive all the money that is collected by the American tax system.
But
the government was run on, before that, was run on, you know, imposts and tariffs and all these little taxes nobody even knows about, and was not collected from private individuals based on their income, which actually, you know, there are all kinds of questions about whether that's even constitutional.
So, but still, those bills are sitting there to be paid. Yes, please.
Tom,
Alan, thanks for calling. David?
What you're hearing here is tax protester nonsense. For starters, the success of tax protesters in claiming that the income tax isn't legal, the last thing the caller said, after 90 years of litigation is 0.000. And it is not true that your income taxes are paid to a bunch of bankers. It's just not true. But there are a whole lot of people who believe that, and I think our tax system is driving a lot of people who are having a tough time economically to the view that the federal government is a criminal organization that extracts illegally money from people.
Let's see. So, but there's a lot of interest being paid. I mean, Alan's clearly got that right, but that's part of our obligation.
But the individual income tax in the year I remember at the moment is 2004 was $822 billion.
Yep.
The interest on the federal debt that year was somewhere in the order of $300 billion. The total federal government budget is over $2.5 trillion. Mm. And we're bringing in around $2.2 trillion or so, somewhere in that range, in total revenues from various kinds of taxes. This notion that there's a bunch of rich Jewish bankers out there who are ripping us all off is just nonsense. But it is being heavily marketed all over the country by various forms of people who are engaged in various forms of tax denial. They want to say that the tax isn't legitimate, the government isn't legitimate.
And you're saying there's a kind of the equity issues may be part of what's building the fever around that.
Absolutely. I mean, we have a tax system today that is, instead of greasing the wheels of commerce, it is throwing sand in the gears. And so you are seeing all sorts of unintended consequences. Jobs going offshore, assets going offshore, intellectual property going offshore, corporations. Back in 1990, about 1% of U.S. corporate profits were taken in tax havens like the Cayman Islands. Mm. It's now in the neighborhood of 20%.
You know, I want to look more closely at this issue of what would happen if the AMT were repealed, what the consequences would be. Leonard Berman joins us right now from Washington. He's a senior fellow at the Urban Institute, director of the Tax Policy Center. Tomorrow, he's testifying before Congressman Neal's Select Revenue Subcommittee. Leonard Berman, thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
So there's unhappiness about this, a rich man's tax that's now sitting down in the middle class zone on many people. If it were repealed, where does it go? Who pays the freight if the AMT goes away?
Well, there are a number of different ways you could make up the lost revenue. It's not painless. If it were, it would have been fixed years ago. But basically, you either close some other deductions or loopholes, or you adjust income tax rates, or you do some combination of the two. My favorite option to pay for repealing the AMT would be to roll back the tax cuts that were imposed on capital gains and dividends. If you're really trying to clamp down on tax shelters, capital gains are a good place to start looking. If you read David's excellent book, you'll see the capital gains are a linchpin of a lot of tax shelter schemes.
But how much of this $70 billion could that cover? Is it inevitable that this tax burden sit on this upper middle class? And does that look fair? Maybe it is fair. I mean, maybe it's just the backdoorness of it that has people upset.
Well, you can decide who should make up the lost revenue. If you actually raise capital gains rates back to where they were before 2003, which would be a top rate of 20%, still lower than the rate on regular income, mm-hmm. and also tax dividends as they had been for most of our history, just like other income, and increase tax rates modestly, you'd actually be shifting the tax burden away from the middle class and onto mostly very high income people. Most of the capital gains are realized by people who are extremely wealthy. There are other things you could do. You could adjust rates across the board, or just adjust the top three income tax rates, or you could eliminate the state and local tax deduction, which causes shudders of fear from people who live in high tax states. But the fact is that the AMT is taking it back anyway. So just actually eliminating the state and local tax deduction would simplify tax preparation for a lot of people. It's not a particularly effective way to help state and local governments, because the states that get the biggest benefit are the ones with very high-income residents.
David, let me ask you, if I may, where do you see this $70 billion chunk that comes from AMT most reasonably or equitably sitting? You know, if you were king of the tax hill.
Well, it's beyond dispute that we have reduced significantly taxes on the very highest-income Americans. When you get to the very tip top, the top 100th of 1%, and that's a group of people that makes as much money as about the bottom 60 million Americans, they are now paying taxes at roughly the rate of people who make $100,000 or so, and they're in income category of $10 million and up.
Mm-hmm.
One of the concerns in doing this, however, is if you simply repeal the alternative minimum tax and don't do anything else, you will create somehow new loopholes in the tax system. I've talked to several loophole artists who've said, oh, yeah, if they just outright repeal it, trust me, I'll find a way to make my clients get a deal out of it.
Mm.
What we really need to do is have a serious discussion in this country about tax burdens and how to raise taxes, or we're going to just continue to run into problems like this.
But do you think it's inevitable and maybe even just that people making 75 to 500, I think was the range you used,
right,
pay a bunch of this? That may not sound like a whole lot to people in high-cost states, but that's way up if you look at the percentile of income earners that they sit in.
Taxes, if you go back in history, have a heavy moral component to them. It was the idea of taxation based on the ability to pay 2,500 years ago in Athens that gave us the first democracy.
Mm.
And I can't find any moral argument for saying because you're married, decide to have children, and own your own home that you should be thrown into the AMT. And I certainly can't find any moral argument that says if you get gravely ill or your loved one does, we're going to throw you into it.
Mm. Let's take a call from Amherst, Massachusetts. David, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have two comments.
Yeah.
One is a political one, and one's a very specific practical device that I've used to avoid this tax.
Oh, good.
On the political side, I think if you look at the demographics, you'll see that this really affects Democratic states a lot more, and it's not surprising to me that under a Democratic Congress that we're going to pay more attention to this.
You're looking at coastal blue states, high-income, high
exactly.
state tax.
Like property taxes particularly,
yep.
which affects me very much here in Amherst and other people in New England particularly. So I think that that's going to be bringing it to the front burner in a really important way. And it's the second thing is a practical thing. This is kind of odd. I saw this a few years back. We're not, my wife and I make about $130,000
okay.
between us.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw that we were going to hit this because of our high taxes and these other deductions. And I realized that to actually max out the employee savings plans way beyond our means, I saved by avoiding the tax. It was better to borrow and pay interest on what I borrowed than to pay the tax.
So to sort of max out your 401k, even if you didn't feel like you could afford it, was better than going over the AMT line.
I couldn't afford it, but to borrow $20,000 or $25,000 and pay the interest on that turned out to be better than the tax.
Well, that's amazing. Tom Curtis, what do you say to that strategy?
Well, that's a very interesting strategy. And, clearly he's learned how to reduce his overall taxable income. And that's the key point here. But, I have to tell you, in listening to the congressman and the other guests, this may sound sort of radical coming from me, but I would be much in favor of a flat tax or a value-added tax and just, completely ditch the entire system that we have now.
Where do you think that would push the burden of taxation? Would it be the same burden on this middle, upper middle class? Or would it push it higher up the income spectrum?
Well, I think you're going to find that it would push it higher up the income spectrum, which is where it should be. I don't think that I've got to tell you, I have clients that range from $10,000 a year in income to millions and millions of dollars a year in income. And the people who are earning millions and millions of dollars pay relatively little on a percentage basis in income tax compared with the people who are earning $10,000. In fact, with Social Security added in, the people earning $10,000 pay a much higher percentage of their income in tax than the people who are making $10 million a year.
To hear we're getting down to it.
Can I respond to that?
Yes, please.
I've heard that claim made by other people, but when you look at the aggregate data, it's just not right.
The wealthy carry a lot of the tax burden.
The effective tax rate does increase pretty substantially with income. A value-added tax would fall very heavily on low- and middle-income families because they're the ones who are consuming or spending all their income, whereas high-income people can save most of it. A flat tax is a little bit better because it's got something for people at the bottom, but again, it's effectively a sales tax that's run through an income tax-like device, and that means that high-income people are going to be paying a lower share of their income in tax. Low-income people get a break under the flat tax, which means that if you're raising the same amount of revenue, the burden has to be shifted onto the middle class. So I don't think that's that's a great solution.
Well, we're trying to get at least to some kind of honesty in the conversation. Let me get a call from Storrs, Connecticut. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Love the show.
Thank you.
I'm going to, I guess, make the worst PR move in the world and defend the flat tax, the AMT a little, and also the wealthy people. I'm a CPA and not wealthy, but I can tell you they pay an awful, awful lot, and everyone says that they, you know, wouldn't mind that problem. But if you sit down and write a check for $600,000 or something to the government, you'd mind.
But it's all relative, right? I mean, if you made $600 million, $600,000 doesn't look so bad.
But if you look at the statistics, as I think one of your guests or callers was mentioning, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but maybe 10% of the people in the country pay 60% of the tax. So, you know, as they say, I'm not wealthy, but when I drive my six-year-old car down the highway, I know who paid for it. You know, it's not me.
So does the AMT look all right by you as it goes down into the middle class? I mean, we're talking about at the margins, who's being sucked in here?
I think the reason, the thing people aren't noticing or mentioning in this is that the AMT is a floor. That's what it does. It puts a minimum, just like it says. So the reason we're seeing more of it is because the regular tax rate has been cut. It's been cut so it pushes your tax burden down to the floor. That's why you're hitting the floor. So most people who are seeing AMT in a regular situation, if they actually compared their taxes to the year before when they had no AMT, they're lower this year with the AMT. You're only seeing the AMT because the regular tax got pushed down below it.
But it hasn't really been pushed down, has it, if the AMT kicks in and holds your taxes up?
If your tax was $5,000 last year and the regular tax rate says push it down to 3 and the AMT stops it at 4, it's still $1,000 lower. That's what no one's talking about.
Mark, thanks for your call. David, how do you respond to that and to the idea that, you know, hey, the rich pay plenty. Why is the middle class, even upper, yelping here?
Well, first of all, most wealthy people pay very substantial taxes. And if you have to write $1 million or a $10 million check to the government every year, I have no doubt that, you know, that really gets in your craw. However, the issue that this all began with in 1969 is that segment of people who are really aggressive about not paying taxes. Mm. And we have some very wealthy people who pay little or no tax.
Thousands,
and we're not addressing
by your reporting.
The current law. The second issue that the caller raises is, he's quite right. I think Len Berman's number shows something like about 1 in 12 people have their entire Bush tax cut taken away by the alternative minimum tax. Most people lose a quarter to a third of it statistically. But it's the way that it's taken back from you. I mean, again, I go to, are we going to say because you're a homeowner, we're going to deny you that deduction? It's not like you're using the money for a yacht, a private jet, artwork that you've come up with some scheme for. Mm. These are the ordinary expenses of regular Americans.
David, do you see the national conversation around taxes somehow getting back to that moment in 1969, where, as you described it at the top of the show, people heard, they had rich paying nothing, and they sat down and really talked about it and said, this isn't fair. We've got to fix it. Now, the fix may have turned out to have all kinds of problems with it over the long term, but, you know, but there was something, the moral element in that conversation that went on. Do you see it returning to our conversation about taxes?
I do see more of this going on, but we do live in an era which, instead of people being judged by the content of their character, they are judged by the depth of their wallet. And so long as we idolize money per se, not people's character and contribution to society, it's certainly going to mitigate against having a serious discussion about the moral component of tax.
Leonard Berman, do you see the AMT as the straw, the match that lights the flame that gets the conversation going potentially?
I think the AMT could turn out to be a blessing in disguise if it turned out to be a factor that led to some serious tax reform, not flat tax, but something like what we did in 1986, getting rid of a lot of loopholes and deductions and this time fixing or eliminating the AMT, you know, dealing with those loopholes that David's friends know how to drive a truck through, but doing it as part of the regular tax and not making people figure out their taxes two different ways. I think we're going to need a lot more revenue to finance the huge demands on the government when the baby boomers retire. And the current tax system is too complicated and it's perceived as too unfair to do it. We need a working tax system that taxes people fairly and in the simplest way possible. Mm.
So this may be one to watch, maybe the thread that starts to unravel toward the possibility of something better. Leonard Berman at the Tax Policy Center, Urban Institute, thanks very much for being with us this hour. Thanks for your insights.
Thank you.
David K. Johnston, always great talking with you, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tom Curtis, good luck with the rest of tax prep season there. Don't get overwhelmed, my friend. Thanks for your insights today.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Tom Curtis in Gaithersburg, Maryland. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.